Morning. You all right if I just like stand down here for a little? Because when I stand up there, it just feels awkward. Like I'm like looking all over you. I should stage dive then, and that would be really bad. So, good morning. My name's Scott, as Colin mentioned. And just to give you a brief overview of the craziness that God's brought me over the past year. So there's this thing called Young Life. Have any been part of Young Life at all in here? Okay, one, cool. All right. So Young Life is an international organization since 1940, and it's all about teaching and showing Christ to young people. That's it. It's real simple, right? It's the job of the church. It's a beautiful thing. So with that, we started, a group of us launched a Young Life up here in the Upper Park Valley, and I was not looking to be part of running this thing. Actually, I was going to be on the sending team, group of adults. We're going to find a leader, and one morning, Claire Moyer said to me, he's like, look, I don't mean to be rude, but you're the dude. And you got to start praying about this, because everybody on the group thinks you're the dude, and you need to pray about this. And I didn't want to pray about it, because I wasn't in the mood to start something else. I was already good with all I had, and I was good, and everything was fine. I was happy. I had my jobs, had my pay, kids were good, everything's fine. Did not want to take another adventure. I was good. Everybody ever forget like that? Then all of a sudden, God starts knocking on the door. And that morning, through a series of crazy events, I can share that with you later, I became the leader and head of the Upper Perk Young Life. And we started this venture where we have the principal of the high school, who is a believer, sits on our sending team. We have teachers that sit on our sending team, pastors, lay people, businessmen, women, moms, dads. And we started this initiative to go reach our campus for Christ. And the YMCA has now opened their doors for us to start a junior high program there. And we're actually going to have a junior high and senior high ministry running in our community that students and our believers will be able to easily bring their friends to and have space that their friends can hear about Jesus through them with us in a group setting. So I'll probably stop back later with more information on that, but that's not why I'm here this morning to tell you all about that. But it was a transition for me. So I'm stepping out of the pastorate and going full bore into Young Life. So I need your prayers on that one. And see, I say this to you because in this whole bit, I know you all have been doing these crazy questions about God. And the one that Chris gave me was this really easy one. Like, by the way, if you're in this room and you're the one to ask this question, how to care for people, like, in a microwave society, yeah, shame on you. Because I sat hard on this. I tried to come up with a good title, so I call it Long Haul Caring in a Microwave Society. And I say that because sometimes we as believers, we want to pray to God, and we want him to be Santa Claus. Right? Well, let's be real. We even go as far as the song says, naughty or nice list, right? Like, God, I've done all this for you, so give me this. God, we've been here, and I've been down this road with my son, so fix him now. Right? My mother is driving me crazy, Lord. Make her better. Yeah, some of you related that one, right? And see, we do this thing with God where we expect he's supposed to come down in a knight in shining armor, wave his magic wand, bring out the Christmas sack, and make it all better. Guess what? There's nothing in the Bible that says he does that, except one time, and it's bringing Jesus to this earth. And I'm laying that as a foundation for you. We're going to look at some scripture. But the big thing that I want to express this morning to you is this. The way that people find out about God is through our own lives. It's really hard to think that sometimes because I don't want that responsibility. Because I don't know about the rest of you, but when I wake up in the morning sometimes, I look in the mirror, I'm not the picture-perfect Jesus guy. And I'm saying that because there's this thing called grace, and I'm laying this foundation for you because we're going to watch this video, and it is very funny. If you don't laugh, we can talk later, and I can explain why it was funny. But it's funny. But what I want you to do is you're watching it. I want you to see a friendship there. And I want you to just watch and look and see what was the problem and how did the friend solve it and how did it go there, okay? So they're going to play this, and it is funny, but there is meaning behind it. Notice that's a real fisherman because that's a 10-pound bass. All right, so what were the dynamics there in that friendship? What happened there? What was the need? From Tim. Tim's in the boat. What happens? He gets a cramp, right? And all of a sudden, can't catch the fish. Now, his first instinct, what do you see first? Does he immediately hand it over to Cletus? No, he fights with it for a little bit, right? Did Cletus offer his assistance in that video? No, Cletus got stuck with the reel. How many of you ever had that in life? Your friend shows up on your doorstep, you get that text message, you get that phone call, and all of a sudden you're stuck with the reel. Right? I mean, Cletus was taking a nap. He was happy. Everything was cool. And then all of a sudden his reel gets thrown in his face, and he's got to haul in the 10-pound bass. See, I say this to you, and I know it's funny, but I was hoping that this image will stay in your head, because even in a video like this, the reality of friendship is there. So as we hit this, there we go. All right. So life is a journey. All right. Now, so many times we want it to be a superhighway. In our microwave society, the way we live, we want everything to happen now. Matter of fact, I get frustrated sometimes when my microwave doesn't heat up fast enough. The package said 4 minutes, and now I have to go to 5. Right? But we do it. Like, we're so programmed for here and now that when you look at a picture like that, or that looks crazy to me. But yet that's life. We keep moving. We keep grooving. Things go left. Things go right. Sometimes we hit an uphill to get a downhill and all those fun little metaphors. But the fact is, there's nothing in Scripture at all that says life is going to be simple and easy. Matter of fact, it says we're at war. We live in wartime. So Joshua 1:9, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Now, this is words that God gave directly to Joshua. Now, what was Joshua's big job? Anybody? Huh? Take the land, right? Or take the reel. Right? I mean, think about it, right? He's got to take the land. So Moses has died off, one of the greats. Joshua's now in charge of it all. So we're talking like a lot of people. And he's got to go take this nation. He didn't go to general school. He didn't get all these fancy trainings or anything like that and all the PowerPoints. He doesn't have his drones flying over to check on things. I mean, think about it. Like, this is raw. There's no Twitter. There's no microphones. There's no way for him to project to tell the orders to everybody. But God says that wherever you are, he's going to be. So what's a characteristic of God that we see in this? What's it say about God? Come on. He's with us, right? Just that easy. Matthew 18:20. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am among them. Where's God at? Among them, he's present. Finally, let's look at this one. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. So if God is with us, he's ever present, we have this job of being a faithful presence in this society, in this world we live in. But notice that the kingdom that we've signed up for and subscribed to is not of this world. So if that's the case, then God doesn't operate on a microwave society. Think about that. The way God operates is a slow brew perk. He does it. Anybody really into coffee in here? Any coffee connoisseurs? Okay, coffee connoisseurs. Would you ever take some grounds, throw it in the water, and pop it in a microwave? No! That's like sacrilege! Like, you do that, and we're like, you might as well just go get Folgers. And if you drink Folgers, I'll introduce you to Speakeasy, and then you'll stop drinking Folgers. But anyway, I say this to you because, see, sometimes we do this to God. We say, okay, God, here's the deal. I got a microwave. I got instant access TV. I've got my Alexa that gives me all my music. I got everything I need, Lord. So now you must come down into my space and do your deal. Because Jim Bob next door is driving me nuts. Him and his wife are fighting every day. And I've been praying over them, so I want them to change, Lord. Now, let's go. I'm faithful. I've been praying for 2 years, Lord. It's 5 years. They're still that way. You know what I'm talking about? Family members, loved ones, siblings. I can go through the list in my space of the people that drive me crazy, and I wish they'd change their ways. So I want to throw this quote out to you. Well, first of all, this picture. See, so sometimes I get really angry at God because I want to know where he was. I've got things that run in my head about tragedies that have happened, and maybe you have them in your life, and you go, where was God? But yet, according to all those verses, he was present. See, isn't it funny, like, we invite God into our space, but he's already there? See, I think sometimes we forget that God is here with us. And see, sometimes I don't like it because, again, I want Santa Claus God. But yet, we want our free will, don't we? We do not want to be controlled by God because then he just becomes a puppet master and our lives don't really don't mean anything. But the fact that he made each of us individual, I mean, look around the room right now. Everybody look around. See God's creativity? Some funny, some not, you know. Spouses are looking at us going, oh, I know how creative he got, you know. But when you think about this, all right, he made us all individual. We have these individual characteristics. And he wants us to have free will. He wants us to make choices because he wants us to love. Because love is a choice. And if there's no free will, then we can't have love. So that means people have the option to be an idiot. I've proven it. But think about it. So many times when we talk about caring for people, we want everything fixed right away. We want to step into our life. We say, okay, you're going to do this, 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 and this. And then everything's going to be fine. And then they do it for a moment. Then they screw up, and they go back to the way they were. Then they get fixed again, and go back to the way they were. And they get fixed again, and go back to the way they were. And we sit here and go, God, where are you? Why have you not fixed this? So there's this quote, and I love this quote, and I want to read it to you. The reason, simply put, is that seeking control is not the solution to the human condition, but it is part of the problem. If you ever want to read some wild books, check out Sky Jathani. He writes these books about Christianity and American culture. He wrote this one called With, and it's about not walking your posture with God. So instead of looking at God to fix everything, he's going to do everything, or a lording over posture with God, that God, you're going to do everything I tell you to, versus a with posture, or walking with God in the moment. He wrote another one called Futureville, another one called Divine Commodity, talking about consumerism in America. Phenomenal books. If you want to study American culture with God, phenomenal writer. But see, look at this quote, though. The reason, simply put, is that seeking control is not the solution to the human condition, but is part of the problem. I want to share a story with you about a girl. We're going to call her Mary. And it's just easier to call her Mary because, I don't know, it's just the name I came up with. So anyway, Mary, I was introduced to Mary one day through a friend in the youth group, and Mary just looked rough. Like, you could look in her eyes, and you just saw pain. She was about 13, 14 years old. She just, it was all rough. Didn't look happy. Her smile was barely there when she said hello to you, and it just, it was dark. This gal kept coming out to youth group Wednesday after Wednesday and just kept coming. And started to build a relationship, my wife and I, some of the youth leaders, and things started to get exposed. We started to find out that life at home is not good. Matter of fact, life at home is so bad, we find out that the grandmother is a drug dealer. Yeah, that's kind of weird, right? You don't hear about grandma being the drug dealer. Mom was a meth addict and then now had MS. They lived in the basement of the house. It was like this split level type deal, so they could at least have a little apartment down there. The uncle and the aunt, they weren't married, they were the siblings. So and the grandmother, they all lived in the up part, and they ran this whole drug operation out of there. They're all addicts. This is where she lived. But one night we got a telephone call, and me and my buddy go over because we found out that someone had broken into their place. And this girl had all kinds of social behavior issues. And the whole it was long. Mental health problems like you wouldn't believe because of the conditions she was living in. So we go over, and me and my buddy show up because we don't know what to expect, but they asked to come over to the house. We'd never been to the house before at all. We go in, and sometimes when I go to situations, I try to be, like, semi-protective. I don't have riot gear, so at least I have this, like, motorcycle jacket that's, like, all padded. So I wore that because I didn't know what to expect or what we were getting into. My other buddy, he was bigger than me, so he's wearing a trench coat, his hat, right? We roll up, and there's state police there. Now, mind you, if I show up, most people don't assume that I'm an ordained minister. All right? So now imagine you're the police officer, and these two dudes start walking up to the house that is known for drug activity. Cops look at them, what are you doing here? And then the mom goes, oh, he's our pastor. That was funny. And the cop had a moment, we talked, we found out that the mother and daughter needed to get out of there. So we rescued them that night. Someone in our church took them in. A single woman had a condo that she was living in, and this mother and daughter started to live there. They started to come to church. They started to be part of a church. The mom would fall asleep in church and snore. Well, think about that, right? What would you do if someone conked out next to you that you didn't know started snoring? Let's be real. You wouldn't be happy about it. Be like, what's that? How disrespectful is that? Does she know she's in the house of God? Right? Then when she talked, very loud. See, because see, when you get on drugs at 19, you end up being a 19-year-old the rest of your life when you're on meth. It messes your head up. The daughter progressively got worse as well, started to have suicidal issues, things like that. We kept asking the mom for a year. I had four times I had to go out with an ambulance and meet at the house, trying to get this girl into long-term care. State of Pennsylvania has this really dumb law. 14 years old, you can call the shots for your medical care. Think about that. 14, you get to call the shots. So this girl would go into the hospital, into the psych ward, get the evaluation, and she'd go, all right, I'm out. Because that's state law. It got so bad that we as a church, and I'm really paraphrasing, I mean, it was bad, like at a convention, she had to go home, she wouldn't take her meds, had a standoff in the middle of the cafeteria with a 15-year-old girl at a convention in Pittsburgh, and she's yelling and screaming at me, and I almost had to get security. That's embarrassing. It's awkward. And see, we walked along this family, and I'm not telling you all the stories, I'm just giving you a brief synopsis, because it got to the point where we actually had to write a letter, hand the letter over to the family, and say, we're done as a church with you until you get your daughter into psychiatric help. I've never heard of a church writing a letter to say we're done with pastoral care, period. To the point where it was so bad that then the daughter showed up at church with the mom, started yelling and screaming, and I had to call the police on a Sunday morning. If you want to hear something funny, then the cops were out earlier that day too for somebody else. So we had the cops two times at our church in one day. That was pretty wild. But I'm saying this because I didn't know what else to do. And see, I prayed to God every day, fix her. But see, then that alleviates free will. And see, every day we kept dealing with it. So then, eventually, through this process, mom had to take her because the police took her off to the hospital. And now the police were involved with a level of mental health restraint. And she ended up getting psychiatric help. And mom got forced into it by the state because she was going to lose her daughter if she didn't. And see, I'm saying this to you because we went through a year. Some of you have been dealing with stuff longer than a year. Some of you, it's been a lifetime. And see, I'm saying this to you because she's not perfect today. But the girl's a lot better off. Like, she had an encounter with the Lord, I know that, but then it kind of wavered all the way through. So I don't know how God deals with all that, but he'll figure that out. He's bigger than me. I know, shocking, right? And I'm saying this to you because I'm going to throw one at you real fast, and then we're going to close out. But I need you to hear this, too, from my side, okay? In my own life, newsflash, I'm a little heavy, okay? I know you guys probably didn't notice. I'm wearing a slimming shirt. But when I got into pastorate, I gained 100 pounds over the past 10 years of my life because I'm an emotional leader. And when things get stressed or I had a really good day,
It's a block of cheese and some of my favorite beverages. Then on top of it, maybe a little ice cream. Kids are in bed. Honey, you want me to go hit DQ? Yeah, you all know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying. Over this past last year, I got to lose 100 pounds. Doctor wants me to get slim. I'm going to die early, all that stuff, right? So I go through this whole thing. Lord, take my weight away. Lord, take away my desire to eat. Well, not completely, because I still need to live. But I go through all these prayers, right? I do all these things on my knees and all that stuff, and then I take the cheese and I eat it. Right? You all know what I'm talking about. And you sit there, and I'm going through this process, right? Then this past summer, I had a mental breakdown over my weight. I ride a bicycle. Those of you that don't know, I run a nonprofit bike shop in town. It used to be the community center we had, turned into a bike shop with kids, and we do all this crazy stuff with our bikes. But there I was riding a bike. We took some kids up to Canada and some young adults to do some service work and ride our bikes around. And there's three of us going up a hill. Now, you have to understand, I pride myself on my bike riding. I'm a really good cyclist. I can truck. So when you got to carry 300 pounds around every day, your legs got it going on. And I could ride. And I hit this hill, and I couldn't get up the hill. I had a mental breakdown on the hill. I started screaming. I started losing my tongue. I just went nuts. And this young guy, 19, rolls up behind me and goes, "You okay, Scott?" "No, I'm not." And I just went off. And he looks at me and goes, "Well, I guess it's time you need to lose weight, huh?" And he didn't say it like as a smart aleck. He said it because he cared about me. And there was this moment where I realized I had to. So I've tried all kinds of things. Alan knows. Alan's tried to push me a little over the years. I've tried all kinds of stuff. So finally, I actually had to put my money where my mouth is in the local gym. I gave them $500. And they said in 6 weeks, they'll have me lose 25 pounds or 6% of my body fat. And if I lose it, I get my $500 back. All right, I could say no to that, right? So let's go. It was amazing. These people came around me. And what I did is I gave it to the Lord. So every morning I get up, I have to do these three gym classes. Dear Lord, I'm going to tell you right now, when you put me in this thing called drum cardio where you bang on this little yoga ball and you're the only dude in the room and there's 20 women, awkward. And I had to, like, humble myself in this process. And I started to give it to the Lord. It amazed me because so many people wanted me to lose weight. So many people. It amazed me that in 2 weeks, I got to share my testimony three times. I got to meet another believer that's there, and she's been praying over the gym, so we started praying over the gym together. And I'm already down 15 pounds in 2 weeks. I'm looking to get rid of my junior hire that I carry around every day, so it's like 100 pounds I want to get rid of. And see, I'm saying this to you because it's not only like, it's not only the long-term, the long-haul care is not only us to other people, but we have to look at ourselves too. See, it's so easy for us to look out at someone else and go, "I'm not picking on you, you're just in front of me, so I don't know your issues in life, so we're all good, okay? But dude, you got to knock it off and get right with Jesus." That's how we get. We don't want to look at ourselves. So what I would love for us all to think about as we leave this space today, and before I pray for you all, is this. Stop thinking about caring for somebody else. Stop thinking that you're the hero and they need to be rescued. But instead, think about your friendship that you have with that person. Because they might never change. But the love of God never changes. And even though someone might not change and be fixed the way you want them to be, there's still a lot of beauty in that person beyond that. And can you look at them the way Jesus looks at them? With the eyes of grace? You can tolerate a person. You don't have to tolerate their lifestyle or their choices. But think about that. Think about yourself and how the long haul is there with God. In our culture, we want everything fixed now. Go to the doctor, get this surgery, do this, do that, all that jazz. But the fact is, for each and every one of us, we're a long haul project with Jesus. So as you're dealing with people and you're walking with them, focus on the friendship. Realize that God is there with you. Pray for them. Pray with them. Get involved in their lives even more. Because at some point, you're going to need a friend too. Let's close in prayer. Lord, I thank you so much for this time that we gathered this morning. Lord, you are with us always in the tragedies and the joys. So, Lord, I ask that you show us this week, Lord, as we've gathered this morning together for this moment, that you will show us this week who needs to be loved like you love us. Lord, maybe it's a stranger, maybe it's a long-haul relationship we got going on, Lord. Lord, I ask that you motivate us to be there in the dark and in the light. Lord, I ask that you bring courage to us so that we can be courageous in those spaces. And Lord, help us to love on people with grace and mercy as you do for us every day. And we give this to you in your awesome holy name. Amen.